Nanasyastra vicharanaika nipuna.
Nanasyastra vicharanaika nipuna.
Sadharma samstapako.
Sadharma samstapako.
Lokanam hitakarina tribhuvane.
Lokanam hitakarina tribhuvane.
Manyo saranyam karo.
Manyo saranyam karo.
Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajana.
Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajana.
Ande Namataliko.
Ande Namataliko.
Vande Rupa Sanatana Guyago.
Vande Rupa Sanatana Guyago.
Jiva Gopala Go.
Jiva Gopala Go.
Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghuya Go.
Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghuya Go.
Jiva Gopala Go.
Jiva Gopala Go.
From the Nectar of Devotion, from the 21st chapter, entitled Qualities of Sri Krishna. Highly intelligent. A man is called intelligent if he has a sharp memory and fine discretion. As far as Krishna's memory is concerned, it is said that when he was studying in the school of Sandipani Muni in Avantipur, he showed such a sharp memory that by once taking instruction from the teacher, he immediately became perfect in any subject. Actually, his going to school of Sandipani Muni was to show the people of the world that however great or ingenious one may be, he must go to higher authorities for general education. However great one may be, he must accept a teacher or spiritual master. Krishna's fine discretion was exhibited when he was fighting with the untouchable king who attacked the city of Mathura. According to the Vedic rites, those who are untouchable are not to be touched by the Kshatriya kings, not even for killing. Therefore, when the untouchable king seized the city of Mathura, Krishna did not think it wise to kill him directly with his own hand. Still, the king had to be killed. Therefore, Krishna decided, with fine discretion, that he should flee from the battlefields so that the untouchable king would chase him. He would then lead the king to the mountain where Muchakunda was lying asleep. Muchakunda had received a benediction from Kartikeya to the effect that when he awoke from his sleep, whoever he might see would at once be burned to ashes. Therefore Krishna thought it wise to lead the untouchable king to that cave so that the king's presence would awaken Muchakunda and he would at once be burned to ashes. Yeah, the story is basically that Muchakunda was very surrendered. And Indra would always call upon Muchakunda again and again to fight against the demons. Because there's an ever ongoing fight in the universe between the demigods and the demons. Srila Prabhupada said, therefore, we should not be surprised if there's opposition to this movement. Because there always is. Anyway, Muchakunda was enraged by Indra in fighting and fighting and fighting. So then, after a long time of fighting, he was offered this benediction by Kartikeya, who is the military commander of the demigods. And then he asked for the benediction that if anyone would wake him up, that he would be able to burn that person to ashes with his eyes, knowing that Indra would always come to wake him up. If Indra heard that benediction, he was sure that Indra wouldn't come again. And he was so tired from this fight. So, finally Muchakunda was found himself in a cave, but he was in deep sleep for a long time. And when Krishna fled from the battlefield, it was extraordinary because Krishna, he was walking very leisurely, kind of really relaxed. He was kind of strolling away from the battlefield. And Kalyavana, who was the... he was chasing Krishna and running at full speed, but he didn't get any closer. He stayed at the same distance. And Krishna was kind of very... And then Krishna walked into that cave, and then Kalyavana walked into that cave also, and it was kind of dark. And then he saw this personality sleeping and said, now look at this Krishna. Now he's sleeping here. He thinks he got away. Well, so he woke him up by kicking him. He kicked him hard. But it wasn't Krishna, it was Muchikunda, who then, of course, opened his eyes and burnt him to ashes. In that way, Krishna got the job done. So, there are... intelligence is a gift from Krishna. And it is said, karma daiva netrena yanasudeya upapachyate, that according to our karma and divine arrangement, we are receiving a yantur, a body, a machine. Jantur is machine, a machine. So, the particular machine or body that we receive is then endowed with a certain amount of intelligence. What to do, that's it. Of all living entities, Lord Brahma is the most intelligent. He has a body which is made of pure intelligence. And he has four heads that can all think independently at the same time. But even Lord Brahma had been meditating on the dust of the lotus feet of the gopis of Vrindavan for 60,000 years, and still he couldn't understand that dust. How did the dust attain that position at the lotus feet of Krishna's pure devotees? Lord Brahma knew, being very intelligent, how difficult it is to fix oneself at the lotus feet of the pure devotee. And therefore for 60,000 years he was trying to understand, how is this dust so fixed that it just stays there at the lotus feet of the pure devotee? And even then, in 60,000 years, with four heads at the same time, he couldn't figure it out. So different living beings are endowed with different levels of intelligence. But tadali buddhi yogam dham yena man upayanti te. Krishna says, I will give intelligence to one who tries to come to me. So ultimately, that is the criterion. The criterion is true intelligence means coming towards Krishna. That is intelligence. Therefore, we remember how Srila Prabhupada went to London, and in London there was the Mensa Club. And to be a member of the Mensa Club, one has to have an IQ of 148 minimum. That's the entrance level. So, you know, not everyone makes it up to that level. But Prabhupada was invited there as a guest, and he was entertained by a barrister, a lawyer. And this lawyer, he was very happy to engage in a discussion with Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada began with the metaphor that one should not water the leaves of the tree, but rather one should water the roots of the tree. Right? And Prabhupada explains like that because that nourishes the entire tree. And then at the end of Prabhupada's point, the man interjects and says, in London, you know, he says, well, you know, I beg to disagree, you know, Swami, because, you know, actually, if you pour the water on the leaves, you can make a delicious beverage called tea. So, you know, and he thought he was really smart. Right? And then later on, Prabhupada gave another example. Prabhupada explained how there is the the shadow side of the sun and the light side of the sun. And then again, the man said, well, Swamiji, I beg to disagree, because actually the sun is light on all sides, and the shadow side is only depending on the perception of the observer. Perhaps said, yes, that's what I meant. So like this, the whole discussion went on, and then at the end, the man said, well, Swamiji, thank you very much. Thank you very, very much for the debate. He's in the spirit of debate. And then he said, now I have one more request. Prabhupada said, okay, request, yes. Yes, I have one more request, that you will do our test. And Prabhupada said, test? What kind of test is that? And then the man said, oh, intelligence test. And then Prabhupada said, intelligence is not very important. The man, for the first time in his life, didn't know what to say. And there was a silence for 15 seconds. Then Prabhupada said, we have our own test. You have your own test? Prabhupada said, yes, we have our own test. We have a test to see how God conscious a man is. Then he left. And in this way showed who was the most intelligent. Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. Krishna gives intelligence. Because then one understands the purpose of life. Another famous example is that journalist who said that I heard that the pure devotee knows the answer to all questions. And Prabhupada said, yes. And the man said, then how many windows in the Empire State Building? And Prabhupada said, how many drops of water in a mirage? And that settled that. A deep, profound answer. Not what the interviewer expected, but something much deeper than the number that he was hoping for. The Empire State Building. How many drops of water in a mirage? Mirage has no drops of water because it's an illusion. So your Empire State Building is just an illusion, and your question is stupid. Translating it for you into regular English, right? How many drops of water in a mirage? So like this, we see Krishna gave the intelligence, and Prabhupada showed how he just relied, on Krishna, and he was ready to face any situation, because he was not impressed, not intimidated by anyone, knowing very well that actually shelter at Krishna's lotus feet is the only goal of life. So in this way, the pure devotee knows the answer to any question. So that is intelligence. He's the person Bhagavat. Just like there's a chapter in Srimad Bhagavatam which says, the answer to all questions. Srimad Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. And it points out that in that chapter it is described how every day people are asking so many questions. All living beings are just asking questions and questions. Prabhupada says in the marketplace they're asking questions, how much, like questions and questions. It's just the birds are asking questions. Tweet, tweet, where are you? Tweet, tweet, where are you? Tweet, hi. Tweet, tweet. Like this, you know. And then an unknown tweet, who are you? Like this. The same, it's all Q&A, question and answers. But the pure devotee knows the answers to all questions. Like that. It is said, Sarva Mahagunagan Vaishnava Savira. Krishna Bhakta Krishna Gun Sakila Sanchari. I taught him that verse. All the good qualities of Krishna, they are manifest in the body of a Vaishnava. That is the amazing thing. Yeah? A Vaishnava gradually develops all the good qualities of Krishna. There are two reasons. One is that naturally whatever is important to the master becomes important to the servant. So it's logical that the servant develops the qualities of the master because he holds the same goals in high esteem. So that's understandable. And then, of course, by mercy of Krishna, that's the second answer. Otherwise, how can one develop the qualities of Krishna? When Krishna is pleased, only then. When Krishna is not pleased, then nothing can be attained. Then we can beat our head on the wall and we don't get anywhere. Krishna must be pleased. And when Krishna is pleased, then we are pleased. As simple as that. Then we are satisfied. And when we are not satisfied, so another measurement is when we are not satisfied, not fulfilled, then we know that Krishna is still not pleased. He may be pleased, but not pleased, if you know what I mean. Not really pleased. There are different degrees. Anyway, it takes time. Spiritual life. It is a matter of practice. It is not done overnight. So another quality of Krishna is that he is artistic. One who can talk and dress himself very artistically is called Vidagdha. And we know that Srila Rupa Goswami wrote a play called Vidagdha Madhava, Artistic Madhava. Krishna was very artistic. So artistic is very nice because it's a feat, it's attractive. It's attractive. Beauty is attractive. Artistic, playing with beauty. The exemplary characteristic was visible in the personality of Sri Krishna. It is spoken of by Radharani as follows. My dear friend, just see how Krishna has nicely composed songs and how he dances and speaks funny words and plays on his flutes, wearing such nice garlands. He has dressed himself in such an enchanting way, as though he had defeated all kinds of players at the chessboard. He lives wonderfully at the topmost height of artistic craftsmanship. So Krishna knows how to make the best of things, right? More than anyone. Krishna knows how to use everything for its very best purpose. Therefore, it is the best to offer everything to Krishna. Prabhupada tells that story of the thief who was seated in a lecture on Srimad Bhagavatam and who heard a description about Krishna. And in that description, Krishna was described as being very well dressed and decorated with golden bangles and jewels everywhere and so on. And you know, a thief naturally, out of a professional reflex, is calculating, you know, is calculating the value of things. And every thief has one dream. And that dream is to, in one go, just make it for life. I mean, that's what every thief is dreaming of. And as soon as he heard the description of these diamonds in his mind, he was adding it up and he realized, this guy, if I get these jewels, I've got it made for life. This is it. The golden opportunity. So, after the lecture, he sort of asked where he could find Krishna, and the answer was given that near Govardhan, just walk around Govardhan, and you will find Krishna. And for a long time, that thief was looking, walking around Govardhan daily. Until one day, he saw him, there was no doubt, jewels and gold everywhere. So he went up to Krishna and he said, "Give me those jewels." Krishna said, "No, no, no, I can't do that. Madhyasodha will be very upset." The thief said, "Give me those jewels now!" You know how they get sometimes. So, you know, when they get very serious, then you're supposed, then the rule is give whatever, you know, they ask. So Krishna also did. He gave everything. He gave all the jewels. And then that thief was just thinking that, "I've got it made, I've got it made, I've got it made, I've got it made." You know? I mean, the thing that never happens in your life, dream came true. So when dream comes true, what do you do then? So he's just standing there thinking, "What do I do now? My dream came true. No more dream left." And then he stood there, "Now what am I going to do with all these jewels?" Then he saw Krishna. And then he just suddenly became attracted to Krishna. Unlimited beauty. And he said, "Can I decorate you with these jewels?" And Krishna said, "If you want, sure, if you want, okay." Then that thief made like a whole arrangement. And that night, Mother Yasoda was saying, "What happened? I didn't like decorate you like that. Who did that?" "Oh, my devotee." Krishna is artistic. Krishna is very clever. And Krishna is the greatest thief. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Krishna, he steals the sight of those who look at him and makes people blind. He steals the ability to speak about mundane things from people. They can only speak about him. Krishna steals all the functions of all the senses. In this way, he's the greatest thief. So, when we hear the qualities of Krishna, then we can see that the nature of devotion is filling in how Krishna is attractive. And that is actually what we may explore. See, it's nice to know what's the meaning of Krishna. What's the meaning of Krishna? That's nice to know. But it's nicer still to know how Krishna is all attractive. Not that he is all attractive. So by hearing these qualities, we can appreciate how Krishna is all attractive. Very artistic and playful. Krishna is very clever. A person who can perform various types of works at once is called clever. In this connection, one of the gopis said, "My dear friends, just see, the clever activities of Sri Krishna, he has composed nice songs about the cowherd boys and is pleasing the cows. By the movement of his eyes, he's pleasing the gopis, and at the same time he's fighting with demons like Aristasura. In this way, he is sitting with different living entities in different ways, and he's thoroughly enjoying the situation." Yes. Yes, that's Krishna. No. Many purposes fulfilled simultaneously. It says also in this chapter that Krishna is an amazing linguist, and I kind of like that, because it always makes me think that when Krishna is in the forest with the cowherd boys, they're imitating the sounds of animals, and Krishna also. But I think that because Krishna speaks the language, he's not imitating, he must be secretly speaking to the animals at that time, I think. I don't think he's imitating any. He speaks the language. So, you know, when you speak a language, then naturally you'll say something in that language. So in this way, all these arrangements of Krishna's unlimited opulences are manifestations of one quality, his mercy. Because Krishna is mercy personified, his whole being is merciful. The word mercy exists in different ways. One word is daya. daya is mercy that is widely distributed to all. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, daya karamai. Please give me mercy. Somehow or other, everyone is asking for this mercy. Kripa. Kripa is another word. Kripa is sometimes also used for general mercy, other times used for specific mercy. Give it to me. Okay? And then anukampa. Tate anukampam susamiksama no bhunjane vatnakritam vipakam. It is said that if one is simply tolerating the circumstances in the material world, then one becomes the rightful heir to the mercy, the anukampam of Krishna. So like that. That's mercy from Krishna. Then in the 10th canto, whenever mercy is described, in the 10th canto are the descriptions of Krishna and his eternal associates who are liberated souls. And there, the word for mercy is prasadam. And they see everything as prasadam. So like that, this is very nice. So Krishna is mercy personified. Because Krishna is never alone. See? So that in itself is showing that Krishna is mercy personified. Krishna is always there with his associates. I like that statement in the concluding words from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Srila Prabhupada is at one point saying that actually, Krishna is present. He is always present in the heart. And so then Krishna is not alone. Krishna is present in the heart with all his associates. And all his expansions, all his associates, including the spiritual master. Therefore, not only Krishna is always with me, but the spiritual master is also always with me. So, it's quite amazing to hear that. The spiritual master is described as the mercy manifestation of Krishna. That is his position. Guru Krishna Rupaya Shastra Praman Guru Rupa Krishna Kripa Karena Bhakta Khan. The spiritual master is non-different from Krishna. That is, all the scriptures are giving evidence for that. It is through the Guru that Krishna is delivering the conditioned souls. So that is interesting. Without Krishna, it's not possible. If Krishna was not part of the deliverance, then it's not possible. Therefore, Guru is via media. Prabhupada said, the postman. He's the postman. Dhammam tu saksat bhagavat pranitam. He is delivering the message that originally comes from Krishna. Because all religious principles, they begin with Krishna originally. No one can manufacture. Now it's very fashionable. Homemade religion. That's, you know. You always meet people. I have my own philosophy. Usually it's Mayavada. You have your own philosophy, yeah. What is it then? It's all one. Really? You thought of all of that all by yourself? What an original idea.
So, what to say?
But maybe through speculation, one can come up with an impersonal conclusion.
But one can speculate as much as he wants, but one can never think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead
like Krishna.
That's not possible.
See, if we start thinking logical, one can think, well, logically speaking, whatever, what is matter, right, is the opposite of spirit. Therefore, the qualities that are within matter cannot be in spirit. Therefore, when matter has form, therefore spirit has no form. See? Logical. Very logical. Yes, crooked logic. Very logical. When you say, yes, spirit is the opposite of matter, that's an axiom. Right? That's made a very nice, logical argumentation here, but I begin with an assumption that matter and spirit are opposites. It's not what Plato offers. Plato offers us the story of the cave and how these people are chained up in the cave and how there's a fire also behind them. And the result is that the outside of the cave there's a fire and people are walking past. And as a result, the light of that fire is projecting shadows of the people on the wall of the cave. So they hear, they see the shadows, and they hear the voices. One day, one of them gets free out of the cave, and he sees the real thing. And he sees it's all a reflection. He sees actually what they hold for reality is a reflection of another reality. Of course, in this way, he was also, in a hidden way, speaking about Socrates. Because in the end, he goes back to his friends to tell them the truth and they kill him. Just like Socrates was killed. But the point there is, though, that the material world indeed is a reflection of the original spiritual world. And therefore, man is created in God's image, but not as beautiful. Not quite. So, a perverted reflection, what to do, somehow or other. That's the situation. So, pratibimba, the Yatarbhaka Pratibimba, like a boy who is playing with his own reflection. In that way, Krishna is playing with his energies. And in that way, the material world reflects the original spiritual world. But here, everything is limited by time, space, and thought. Whereas the spiritual world is governed by rasa. So rasa, Krishna is described as akila rasa mritamurti, the one who is entering into so many relationships with so many different devotees. And within these exchanges, there are so many different exchanges. Krishna is pure. There are two kinds of supreme purity. When one type is possessed, one is able to deliver a sinful person. When the other type is possessed, one does not do anything which is impure. A person
who possesses either of these qualities is called supremely pure. Krishna is both. He can deliver all sinful conditioned souls, and at the same time, he never does anything by which he can be contaminated. In this connection, Vidura, while trying to detach his elder brother Dhritarashtra from his familial attachment, said, "My dear brother, you just fix your mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, who is worshipped with beautiful, erudite verses by great sages and saintly persons. Krishna is the supreme deliverer among all deliverers. Undoubtedly, there are great demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, but their position as deliverers depend always upon the mercy of Krishna. Therefore, Vidura advised his elder brother, Dhritarashtra, to concentrate his mind and worship only Krishna. If one simply chants the holy name of Krishna, this holy name will rise within one's heart like the powerful sun and will immediately dissipate all the darkness of ignorance. Vidura advised Dhritarashtra to think always of Krishna so that the volumes of contamination due to sinful activities would be washed off immediately. In Bhagavad Gita, also Krishna is addressed by Arjuna's Param Brahma Param Dama Pavitram, the Supreme Pure. There are many other instances exhibiting Krishna's supreme purity. So, Srila Prabhupada also said that if you want to come close to the Supreme Pure, then you have to be pure. Just as if you want to go close to fire, then you need a body made of fire. Like that. We are but anything in relation to Krishna is most worshipable. Aradhanam sarvesam Vishnu aradhanam param tasmat parataram devi tadiyanam samarchanam. It says that the objects that are related to Krishna, they are even more worshipable than Krishna himself. So, in this way, because we are not able to really approach Krishna directly. But that mercy is coming to us. Just like I was reading how Krishna had a champak flower behind his ear, and then send that to Radharani, and then in that way she got ecstatic symptoms from the champak flower. So of course we are not invested with the same spiritual potency, but still something is there in the exchange of champak flowers amongst devotees also. So like this nectar of devotion is very nice, and one can just open it anywhere and just appreciate, like Srila Rupa Goswami is describing pure devotional service. And he's describing that there are six characteristics in pure devotional service. He says the first one is klesagni. Klesagni. Kles means adhyatmika kles, adhibhautika kles, adhidaivika kles. Or suffering. Suffering from the body and mind, suffering from other living beings, suffering from natural circumstances. So all that suffering is destroyed. So everyone has that problem, that we suffer. And the more we take shelter of devotional service, the more suffering will be destroyed. So one has to have firm faith in that. That's the key, that's very important. So what holds us back when we are engaging in devotional service and still suffering? More service. Just more. It's like something, you have a hole, a big hole, and you throw rocks in the hole, and then you throw smaller rocks between the rocks, and in the end you throw sand and so on. So first you do some big service, and then you cannot do any more big service, and you do some small service in between, and then in between all the small services, still smaller service, little, little, until it becomes very dense, until all our time is filled with service. Then suffering will cease. Srila Rupa Goswami explains, though, that even in bhava there is a little bit of suffering that remains. He said, although maya in bhava has been reduced to a shadow, and the shadow is that there's still some sense of hindrance, that something is not perfect. In prema, everything is perfect. That's what he explains. That's the distinction. And then he says the reason is that in bhava there is still some remnant of reaction to Vaishnava aparat, to previous Vaishnava aparat, a little trace, and therefore a sense of suffering. So then, maybe, what is our condition? All this suffering. The living being is perfectly pure when we come originally from the spiritual world, and then gradually, due to lust and envy, so many offenses are made, and gradually we become covered, and gradually that offensive attitude is our second nature. So, when we speak about avoiding the 10 offenses, it's not that sometimes we commit the 10 offenses. We always commit the 10 offenses, and sometimes we don't. That's how. So like this, we place Agni. Devotional service is Subhada, it is all auspicious. Everything becomes auspicious. Prabhupada is saying, anyone who comes in touch with it is blessed in some way or other. This movement is in that way invisibly changing the whole world. Prabhupada explains, when we use something in the service of Krishna, then the maker of that object becomes purified. Microphone maker is purified. So, that's amazing, because think about it. So many things we're using. Glasses, maker, purified. You know, pillow maker, purified. Whoever made these planks is very fortunate, because the devotees are always dancing on them. In this way, this movement is purifying the three worlds. Now it is the December marathon, and we hear the scores. So-and-so did two books, so-and-so did four books, so-and-so. And then when you hear that, then you think, okay, very nice, but how are we ever going to change the world, right? If we do only two books, or four books, or six books, you know, I mean, how's that? It's not that I'm criticizing it, but I'm saying, what's that going to do for the 7 billion on the planet? Then, you know, how are we going to reach them? So, but we don't see all the unlimited ways that this movement is penetrating into the world. Yes, through the microphone. The factory is a blessed factory. Like that. Yeah. There was this chips factory here in South Africa who always used to give lots of chips for distribution to the devotees. So the whole factory became blessed because of that. Things like this are happening everywhere. So we cannot oversee how great the influence is of this movement. We cannot see. Now, I didn't bring my phone, which is a shame, because I have an article on my phone, which is great. And of course, I can send Priya to go and get my phone.
It's not very memorable.
So the mercy of Krishna is everywhere, and this is quite amazing. Quite amazing. Any questions at this point? Comments?
Thank you. We chant offensively, but
offensively.
Yeah. But still, we are encouraged to chant.
Mm-hmm.
And you were mentioning Vaishnava Parana. So we're lusty, we're envious, and we may think that it's better I don't associate with devotees because I'll offend them, and then I'll be in worse place.
I see. Yeah, no. Yeah, it's interesting how all kinds of philosophies come up in our heads. No, even if we make offenses, we always get the benefit from these offenses. And of course we should, from the service and from the mercy, from the purification. And we should try, we should really make an effort not to make offenses. That's thanks, very quick. Yeah. Batteries almost gone. Good. I hope I can find this thing. Just a moment. Looking quick. Not here. Okay. It's been a really long time. Fine. Here's the one. To you if I don't find it. Yeah, you know, like this topic, you know, like really makes everyone depressed. So we don't want to end with a depressive topic at all, you know, like. So the mercy is greater than what we're doing. And when I mentioned that there was still a trace left, that means only a slight trace, a shadow. It was almost nothing, you know. It's like, so a person is completely in ecstasy. But it's a gradual development of brain. That's all it needs. And it gets more ecstatic every step of the way. And it's already ecstatic in the early stages of devotional service. So we just consciously try to avoid making offenses to the Lord. Try and be respectful to the devotees. That's all. That's important. For the rest, have fun. It's not like we're going to spend the whole day being in fear and anxiety. Oh my God, what if I go make some offenses? Oh God. You know, it's like, not like that. It's actually very blissful all the time. And how could we stay away from the blissful devotees? Stay home in a closet. Oh God, what misery. How long can you be away from the devotees where there's kirtan and prasad? Impossible. Where there's rati yatra? No. So even when we are not pure, it's all fun. That's what I think. What do you think yourself?
It's not possible to make any advancement without the association.
Huh?
There's no possibility of making advancement without the association.
Uh-huh.
So it seems that you have to be
confident
to a certain degree and pray for the mercy of devotees.
Yes. Too. But I don't think that our we are not the international society to avoid offenses. That's not our business. We're the international society for Krishna consciousness. So these offenses, okay, try and avoid them, and for the rest, Krishna's not so heavy. He understands. It's Lord Chaitanya, he understands. We're from the age of Kali. So, what can you expect? But try not to. Give him an inch, he takes a mile. Immediately. <he's out> Any other comment or question? Yes, please.
Maybe your class mentioned that bhakti has six qualities.
Six
qualities. First you call that kleshagni.
Kleshagni, subhada, sudurlava, mokshilakutakrit, sandrananda visejatma, and Sri Krishna akarsani. The first one is it destroys all suffering. Second one is it is all auspicious. Third one, it is rarely attained. Fourth one, it makes the liberation, that is, the happiness that you get from liberation look like insignificant. The next one, Sandrananda Visesatma, is that it becomes more and more dense, this devotional service. And the final one, it attracts Krishna.
So Maharaj, like first one, like you were mentioning, frees one from the,
suffering.
Suffering. And you gave example putting big pebbles and small, like services you do, like bring big services and small, filling all the gaps with, services if you want to avoid suffering. So like it is, very practical for those who are full time. I'm saying.
No, why? At work you can do nice devotional service. You take all the money that you earned and use it all for Krishna, and all your work is transcendental. This question about, for those of us who are working, no. The fruits of your labor, karmani vadikaraste mafalisu kadachananama karma valahi tabur, maste samustu karmani. Take the fruits of your labor, offer them to Krishna, and your whole work is purified.
Yeah.
Perfect, it's perfect. It's the best. It couldn't be better.
But also there are some times.
It's perfect.
So, Maharaj, apart from work, there are certain times when we are not able to, engage ourselves in like temple services.
Temple services, temples. The whole world is a temple. The world is a temple. And you are a pujari, and you're walking in the world, and you're just offering, you take something, clean it a bit, and offer to Krishna. The world is a temple.
I mean, say, we have to develop the consciousness that whatever we are being is ultimately for, is a service.
Yad kurusi, yad asnasi, yad jolusi, yad dasi, yad. No, not everything we're doing is a service. No. It is. We have to do service in everything we do, Krishna said. Not everything we do is a service. No. In everything we do, do service. I was in Jaipur and the bank manager told me, yes, I'm also serving Krishna, just like you. I'm doing what he makes me do. Now he makes me do this bank manager thing. And when he makes me chant like you, then I will chant like you. I am concerned that whatever Krishna makes you do. That is nonsense. There is independence. So Krishna means, give up your independence in every situation. Yet karosi, yet asnasi, yet johusi, yet adasi, yet tapasisi, kunti, yet adhurusa, not alpana. And do everything as an offering to me.
Yeah, I'm going to say, like, our attitude should be, our intention should be, our, how can, how, you know, I guess we can engage ourselves more. That should be intention.
Yeah.
Okay. So even though sometimes we cannot engage, but intention should be like that.
Yeah, we cannot engage due to our false ego, due to our conditioning. Because externally there is no object, no obstacle. See, the reason why we cannot engage is because our internal obstacle, that we are materially conditioned. Because externally one can always engage in service, always, in every situation. You know, there's always mercy to give to people. At work also. Some people are such good preachers, it's amazing. Just like in London there's this Chinese lady and she sometimes comes to bring me to the airport and then she starts preaching. And she found these, and she preaches to Chinese, she always finds some Chinese everywhere. She wants to give the mercy to the Chinese and she finds some Chinese and she talked to them and then she found out they had 8 hours wait on the airport and she says, oh, then you can come to the temple. And she brought him to the temple. She just brought him to the temple. That spirit, you know, it's possible. And she's at work and she's like a she works for a construction department of the government, and she has to approve construction projects, so like budgets and certain inspections. Yes. And she's preaching all day at work, no problem, but she does her job. Subtle, but everybody knows it now, her boss also, like, okay, because she gets away with it. There are so many ways to serve Krishna. But the essence is just take the fruits of your labor and offer it to Krishna. Finished. Then everything is fine. So everyone can serve Krishna 24 hours a day. Doesn't matter where you live. Interesting is that Prabhupada was not a temple devotee. Prabhupada was that nice Mr. Day from the congregation. He used to give nice donations for Janmashtami. Also, somehow or other he would play Madanga. That was a nice thing, this Mr. Day. Nice man. Nice congregational man. Next moment he becomes the Acharya. Right? And he did bigger than all the others. They couldn't believe it. Some had really a problem with it. Ah, it's like, you know, he always was a good businessman. That's why he was so successful. Because it was just too much for them. How could Mr. Day, some congregational member, who took sannyas, you know, but so much later than they took sannyas, how could he be you know, become the next world acharya? Wasn't even a temple devotee. So, let's see who will be the next. Okay. Okay, yes. Good job. I think so, huh? Okay. Yeah, that's what it was. Is that where it begins? No. Okay, I have to go to the title. Yes. So the title of the article is "We're All Hare Krishnas Now."
No.
Meditation goes mainstream. Gradually they're coming out of the woodwork, and suddenly it seems that half the people I know are secretly meditating. They range from casual transcendental meditators to practically full-blown Buddhists or Hare Krishnas. And the strange thing is that these are not hippies or crusties or dropouts or people living alternative lifestyles on an ashram-inspired commune near Sligo. Just regular blokes a few of them quite senior in what they do. They're trusting business types and entrepreneurs and generally pretty serious people. They're not people who go for Reiki or acupuncture or any of the other usual trappings of the I'm not religious but I'm very spiritual person lifestyle. They are fairly practical people. And meditation is just one of their tools, a technology of modern living. I have a theory on one thing that does bind them together. They're fathers of young children. And I have a theory that fathers of young children will do anything for a few minutes of peace and quiet. For some of us, it's the warm embrace of the Sunday papers enveloping you. For others, it's a run. For some, it's sitting in a shed tinkering with something. But seeing for more and more guys, it's meditation. And you can see why. Because it's not really acceptable in these days of super datism to blithely announce that you're heading out for a game of golf. If you're not working, you're supposed to be ministering to your kids or smothering them, as said children probably experience it. But heading off to meditate is completely acceptable because it's like maintenance. It's like pulling into the garage to fill your tank. It's like eating, almost eating chicken soup for the soul. It has to be done. And you can hint darkly that it's to everyone's benefit that you get to your daily meditation or sitting and doing nothing, as it's also known. Sitting down to empty the mind may have been construed in the past as having a little rest, but not anymore. This is because we live in an age of mindfulness, when it's recognized as everyone's God-given right. In the first world, to tune in, to turn on, and drop out for a while, or sit there breathing, as you might call it. I was reading somewhere recently that while we might think of Hare Krishna as a marginal cult, their influence on the world we live in now is enormous. The view seems to be that while the religion has not succeeded in the mainstream as such, the ideas have. Everywhere you look, there is watered-down Hare Krishnaism. From the kinds of food we eat, to the notion of sustainable community-based living, to the whole mindfulness things, it seems we're all a little bit Hare Krishna now. Do you practice yoga? Are you vegetarian? Do you believe in karma? Do you believe in positive vibes through social media? Then, my friend, you might just be a little bit Krishna conscious. Even the Hare Krishnas themselves are living regular lives these days. After the usual sex scandals and so on that plague most cults and religions, many modern Hare Krishnas live what they call householder lives, meaning they don't chant in airports anymore. Instead, living lives of devotion and spirituality while holding down jobs, wearing regular clothes and raising children. I'm toying with the whole meditation idea as a way of dealing with stress and getting a bit of guaranteed sit-down, but it kind of bothers me that it would be the equivalent of someone who doesn't believe in God praying to Him just for a bit of quiet time, or going to Mass to get a break from all the noise. Is it really right? Is it okay that we take the trappings of spiritual techniques just to use them as accoutrements of the modern world? Or is it actually no harm to use these ancient techniques purely as technology without actually buying into the whole thing? Or worse, do the Hare Krishnas and the rest of them know something we don't? Do they know that the more people they can get to chant or meditate or not eat meat or do the yoga, even if those people just do it for well-being and bones of steel, the more people they bring a little closer to Krishna? Will we all end up in saffron robes one day? This is from the Sunday Independent in Ireland. Mm. Yeah, it's quite an amazing article. Okay, thank you very much for Googling it. And that's interesting, isn't it? So, with that, we'll wish you a good evening, sweet dreams, and how the Hare Krishna movement spreads all over the world.